Okay, so I'm back. Last time I was here, we talked about the last judge, which was Samuel. We're going to venture back into Judges, though, and look at probably the most famous judge. Who's the most, in your mind, who's the most famous judge or maybe the most known judge?
Samuel.
Who? That was the worst thing I did, was I asked you all to tell me who it was, and you all screamed out a name, and they all sounded like blah, blah.
I said Samuel.
Samuel? You, Samson? Any others? Gideon? Okay. We're going to look at Samson. We're going to look at Samson today. And you all know the story of Samson. We teach everyone on this side of the building Samson from when they're very young. And most of those stories about Samson, you all know well. So the secret for us, or the challenge we have today, is to study someone who we all know really, really well and figure out what can we pull from that story. What can we pull from the story of Samson that we've studied from maybe a very young age, that we've studied multiple times? What can we pull from that and learn from someone like Samson that we've maybe studied 20, 25 times and learn from them? And that's our task for today. I want us to start in Deuteronomy chapter 7, just as an intro very briefly. We talked about, as a framework for Judges and setting it up contextually and historically, what's going on in Judges, that the children of Israel have entered into the promised land. And I want you just to see what God has said to them about entering into the promised land, and what he said to them after he's given them the Ten Commandments, when they're in the wilderness and they're to head into that promised land in Deuteronomy chapter 7, these verses, because I think it does help us better understand some of the issues that we are seeing in Judges. From verse 1, it says, "When the Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess, and he casts out many nations before you, the Hittites and the Gershonites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them over to you, you shall conquer them and" what? "Utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, nor show mercy to them, nor shall you make" what? "Marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. But thus you shall deal with them. You shall destroy their altars, break down their sacred pillars, cut down their wooden images, and burn their carved images with fire." Go ahead and turn to Judges 2. This is the background as we look into Judges 2. The expectation was the Israelites were going into a land, a promised land. That promised land had inhabitants, and God is instructing them to destroy those inhabitants. And he's warning them that he does not want them to marry those inhabitants, that they worship idols, and there's a danger if they marry into those people, that it will create this real issue. And this real issue is that it will cause them to no longer follow him. It will create an issue with them starting to worship those idols. And so he's quite clear what his expectations are. In fact, when we learn about, when we move from the judges into the kings, and we have the three kings, we have Saul and David and Solomon, what is the ultimate issue with Solomon? He has too many wives. And what do those wives cause Solomon to do? He falls away from God. Why? Because they turned him. And he starts to follow their gods. And the punishment is he takes the kingdom, not away from Solomon, but he takes it away from who?
His sons.
And the kingdom's divided between the north and the south. And so that's the penalty, right? But this instruction is something God gave very early. Okay, so we now find ourselves in Judges. If you look at Judges chapter 2, there's a people that have served the Lord all the days of Joshua, but he has now died in verse 8. And in verse 5 of Judges chapter 2, there's another generation that has arisen, and it's a generation that does not know the Lord, nor the work that he has done for Israel. And the work that he has done for Israel is explained in verse 12. What is that? What did God do for Israel not that long ago? He did what? Took them out of Egypt, okay? And so the children of Israel, verse 11, they're doing evil. Because of that, they have forsook or abandoned God. They've forgotten that he has taken them out of the land of Egypt. And that has, at the end of verse 12, provoked the Lord to anger. And then we learn about this cycle. Right, the cycle of issues that we read about in Judges chapter 2, which is what? What's the cycle? Or I believe Dan refers to it as a clock of the judges. What is it? Okay, so the people, they sin, they follow adultery because they did not destroy all the people in the land, so they start following the idols of their of the people in the land that angers the Lord. He allows them to be oppressed. He allows them to be conquered. They're conquered by different individuals that are in that land. They cry out to God for repentance, for forgiveness, and he hears their cries and he provides someone to help them. And the individuals he provides to help them are who? The judges, or the deliverers. And so they show up, they deliver the people, and they follow God until what? Till the judges die. And the Bible says that they follow God until the judges die, and it says in verse 19, and when the judge is dead, they revert and behave more corruptly than their fathers. And that's the cycle. It gets worse with each generation. It gets worse and worse. Okay? All right. So, flip over to Judges 13. And in Judges 13, the children of Israel, this is a state, the children of Israel have been, they're being oppressed, right? They have, they've been worshiping idols, they've sinned, they're being oppressed, and they're being oppressed by the Philistines. And they've been under Philistine rule now for 40 years. Okay, that's what it tells us in verse 1. And we're introduced to Samson. And what's the first thing we learn about Samson? He had this in common with Samuel. We studied this 2 weeks ago. What do we know about Samson? Nazarite. Okay, so He had Nazarite. His mom, like Samuel's mom, was also barren, and he is Nazarite. So there's certain things that we learn about what it means to be a Nazarite. Flip over to Numbers chapter 6 real quick. Just hold your finger there at Judges 13, but flip over to Numbers 6 really quickly. And in Numbers 6, if you ever wanted to read in a lot of detail what it means in terms of being a Nazarite, this is the chapter. It talks about it in a lot of detail. I only want to look at a couple verses. But if you read in Numbers chapter 6, verse 2, it says, when either a man or a woman consecrates an offering to take a vow of a Nazarite, okay, to separate himself to the Lord, and that's what it means to be a Nazarite. You're separated to God, okay? He shall separate himself from wine and similar drink, verse 4, all the days of his separation, he shall eat nothing that is produced by the grapevine from the seed to the seed, skin. All the days of the vow, and that phrase is important, all the days of his separation or all the days of the vow of the separation. It means there's a time frame on being a Nazarite, right, on having this vow. All the days of the vow of his separation, no razor shall come upon his head until the days are fulfilled for which he separated himself to the Lord. He shall be holy. What's it mean to be holy? Be separated, to be godlike, right? To be different than everybody else. All the days, verse 6, all the days he separates himself to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead body. In verse 8, all the days of separation, he shall be holy to the Lord. So flip back to Judges 13. So that's what it means to take a Nazirite vow. Those are the parameters, expectations. So go to Judges 14. This is what I want us to do. I want us to look at, very quickly, some of these stories that you know about Samson. These you've heard before. And so we're gonna move through them rather quickly, and then we're gonna come back and look at them together in total and say what can we learn from it. But here's the thing about Samson, just to frame it before we begin. When we study Samson as a young child or kid, we study about his great strength, right? His long hair and his great strength. When we get a little bit older and we really study the stories about Samson, what do we learn about him? We learn about him eventually getting a haircut. Was he the kind of person we want to model ourselves after? So what you're going to find as we go through these stories is someone who had a lot of flaws. Right, we think about him, and we think about him sometimes in those child classes of this Samson and this great strong man, and we then when we get a little bit older, we learn about all these character flaws he actually had. Okay, all the things that he did wrong. He had a lot of weaknesses for women. He did a lot of things that, you know, we would not want to model ourselves after, okay? And we're going to see that in these stories. So let's start in chapter 14, okay? So starts off, he saw a woman in Timnah, and it's a daughter of a Philistine. And he goes to his mom and dad, and verse 2, he says, I saw this woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. I want her to be my wife. So he tells his mom and dad, go get her. I want her to be my wife. And his mom and dad say, is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren? Is there no Israelite woman that you could marry among your people? Why do you want to get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? What's that mean? Uncircumcised Philistines. Why do they use that phrase? Not Israelite. Not followers of God, right? Yeah. So remember, what was the first thing we read from Deuteronomy 7? What's the rule? Not supposed to marry Philistines. By the way, for 40 years, who's been over the Israelites? Who's been oppressing them? The Philistines, right? So here he goes to his mom and dad, and he's like, can you go get me this woman from Timnah? I like her. I want to marry her. And his mom and dad's reactions are, well, you know, Deuteronomy 7 says don't marry her. We're being oppressed by the Philistines. Why is that the person you want to marry? Can you not find an Israelite to marry? Okay? So he's like, oh, look, I want to marry her. So he's going to go see her. And on the way to go see her, he comes across this lion. And what's he do with the lion? He kills it with what weapon? His hands. Kills this lion with his bare hands, right? And he leaves the lion. He continues on to Timnah. In verse 7, she pleases him, right? He likes what he sees. That's a problem we're going to continue to see with Samson. He likes what he sees. And then he's returning home. And what has formed in the carcass of this lion?
Honey.
It's honey, right? And so now, what's one of the rules with being a Nazirite? What are you not supposed to do? Go next to a dead body. What's he do? He eats honey out of this lion. Not only does he eat honey out of this lion, who's he give some more of this? This honey's so good, who's he give it to? Gives it to his mom and dad. Doesn't tell him where it comes from. You know, hey, mom and dad, here's this great honey. I got it out of the dead body of a lion. Doesn't tell him that. So they eat this honey. So he goes on, and it's this wedding feast. And at the wedding feast, he makes this bet. He makes this bet with 30 companions of And the deal is they're the winner of the bet gets clothes, 30 pairs of clothes. And the riddle is this in verse 14. Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. And what's it about? It's about the honey and the lion. And no one knows about this lion or this honey except who? Except Samson. He hasn't even told his mom and dad. No one knows. There's no way anyone can get this riddle. Okay, they got 7 days to figure out this riddle. And of course they can't figure it out. And so they go to who? They go to his wife. They go to his wife and you say, you need to tell us, you need to go to your husband and get the answer to this riddle. And if you don't, we're going to do what? Yeah, we're going to burn you and your dad's house down. Okay? So she goes to Samson. And she says to him in verse 16, she's crying. She says, you only hate me. You do not love me. You've posed this riddle to the sons of my people, right? Which means, you know, these Philistines. And you haven't even explained it to me, right? Is this foreshadowing? Who's he going to have come and pester him about an answer to something in a couple of chapters, right? Delilah. Okay, so he says, look, I haven't even told my mom and dad what this answer to this riddle is. So, but she keeps crying on him for 7 days when the feast, so she's crying on him. And so he eventually tells her, right? He eventually tells her. And so she tells these Philistines, they come to him and they say, what's sweeter than honey? What's stronger than a lion? And so he says to them, if you have not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. I've been switching back and forth between the marriage classes and this class. There's probably a marriage class in here in these verses. But anyway, so he's got to pay up on the bet. So what's he do? He goes down and he kills the 30 Philistines, takes their clothes, pays off his bet. He's so angry at his wife, what's he do with her? What's he do with his wife? He gives her to his best man. Some time passes, he comes back, he wants to be with his wife. Her dad's like, I thought you were done with her, so I've let your best man and her be together. But she's got a younger sister. And so he's angry, and so now we get the story of the foxes. What's the story of the foxes? What's he do? How many foxes does he somehow capture and then tie their tails together? How many? I heard the number, 300. 300 foxes he somehow captures, ties their tails together, puts a torch in them because he's so angry about his wife now being with someone else, and he sends them out into the grain storages of the Philistines, and they burn up, okay? And the Philistines are angry about this. They're like, who did this? And they say, well, it's the son-in-law of this man from Timnah. And so what do the Philistines go and do? What's their response? They go and they burn his father-in-law and his wife. They burn their house down, which makes him angry. So what's he do? What's Samson do? He goes and finds them and does what? He finds those that burned down his father-in-law and his wife's house, and he kills them. So now they're on a manhunt, right? They're on a manhunt for Samson. And how many people are looking for him? Does anyone remember? It's the bottom. It's verse 11 of chapter 15. How many people? Three thousand men from Judah. They come down looking for him. Okay, and so they come to get him, and he allows himself to be captured in verse 13. And they tie him up, it says in verse 13, they tie his hands securely, and they bind him with these new ropes. And they're coming along, and he breaks these ropes loose. He breaks these ropes loose, and what's he pick up from the side of the road? The jawbone of a donkey. And how many of these men does he kill? It says he kills 1,000 men with it in verse 15. Okay? Kills 1,000 men with this. All right? So now we're going to continue on in the story. Verse 16, he stops off, sleeps with a harlot. Okay? Another example of really poor decisions that he makes. All right? Now he's in verse 4. Who's he meet in verse 4? All right, Delilah. All right. So now he's met Delilah. And what's it say his feelings are towards her? He what? He loves her. Okay. So he married a Philistine woman from Timnah. He loved her, got married to her. He slept with a harlot. Now he's on to his third Philistine woman. He loves her. And so he marries Delilah. And there's these lords of the Philistine come to her. Does anyone know how many lords there were? I mean, the lords basically they were responsible for these regions. The Philistine territory was broken up into these regions. Does anyone know how many lords there were? By any chance? There was 5 lords. Okay, so there's the Philistine territory was broken up into 5 different territories. So there's 5 different lords. Okay, and so the lords come to her and they say, look, if you can find out for us where his strength lies, we're gonna give you some money. How much money did they offer her? 1,100 pieces of silver. In total? How much did they offer her? 1,100 pieces of silver each. 1,100 pieces of silver each. So how much was she going to collect if she could figure out the strength of Samson? This is how much of a terror he was being. 5,500 pieces of silver if she could figure out the strength of Samson. Remind me, how much did it take for Jesus to be betrayed? 30. 30 pieces of silver. So 5,500 was a going price to figure out the strength of Samson. And so Delilah goes to work trying to figure out the strength of Samson. So verse 6, Delilah says to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and with what you may be bound to afflict you. Now, I don't know about you, but if someone said to me, can you tell me what you may be bound with so that I can afflict you? I'm not sure I would ever give that answer. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't stick around. But for whatever reason, that did not send any warning signals to Samson. Okay? So she's asking, where's your strength live? What can we bind you with so that you can be afflicted? And so Samson says to her, verse 7, if you bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that haven't been dried, then I'm going to be weak like every other man. Which, of course, wasn't true, right? And so she tries that, and he breaks them with no problem. So she comes to him, verse 10. She says, look, you've mocked me. You've told me lies. Now please tell me what you may bound me with. Or what you may be bound with. So she comes back and asks him, you lied to me. That didn't work. Tell me, what can we bind you up with? And again, no warning signs. And he goes on, he says, if you bind me securely with new ropes that have never been used, then I'll be weak like any other man. Now, we know that's not true. How do we know that's not true? A couple reasons, but what's one reason? When he got arrested the chapter before, what did they try to bind him with? New ropes. Okay, so that's not true. So they try to bind him with these new ropes. And he broke them off in verse 12 like a thread. So she says to him, until now, verse 13, until now, all this time, you've mocked me, you've told me these lies. Tell me what you may be bound with. And he says, If you weave 7 locks of my head into the web of a loom, if you weave my hair. All right, he's getting closer, right? Now he's starting to talk about his hair. Yeah, he doesn't seem very bright, does he? He keeps getting asked, what does it take to bind you up? And he keeps going on with the process. Okay, so that she weaves his hair, and of course it doesn't work. So she says to him in verse 15, okay, she's going to come, she's pleading with him, she says, how can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You've mocked me 3 times, you've told me where your great, and not told me where your great strength lies, and it came to pass when she pestered him daily, all right, she's nagging at him daily with words, she's pressing him, that it says his soul was vexed to death. Right, he just was, and that he told her all his heart, and he said, "No razor has ever come upon my head. I've been a Nazarite to God. I've been separated to God from my mother's womb. And if I am shaven, then my strength will leave me, and I'll be weak like another man." And so Delilah goes and tells the lords of the Philistines, and she says, "He's told me his heart." She knows now that he's been honest with her. And so the Lord's come up. She gets Samson to go to sleep. She shaves off the locks of his head. It says she began to torment him, to test him, to make sure his strength has in fact left. And then it says that the Philistines came and they arrested him. And what did they do once they arrested him? They did what? They poked his eyes out, and they take him off so that he becomes a grinder in the prison. And then they throw a party, right? And the party's to whom? Who's the party for? Dagon. And Dagon's who? It's their idol. It's their god. So they throw this party, and they decide when they're having this party that they need some entertainment. And who's the entertainment?
Samson.
So they call Samson. Samson comes out. He's their entertainment. And you know the rest of the story, right? He entertains them. He's put up next to 2 pillars. He's asked that he can hold the pillars. And who's all there? How many people are there? 3,000. Okay, so 3,000 people are there, including the lords of the Philistines. All right, the 5 lords who have paid $5,500 to figure out his strength. The secret to his strength. And so he calls out to the Lord, and he gets his strength back. And you know the story. He pushes at the pillars, and the pillars crumble, and the Philistines, 3,000 Philistines are killed, including Samson himself. And we learn at the end of chapter 16 that he is now judged, the Israel for how many years? All right, 20 years. Okay, so what do we know? I said at the beginning, when we learn the story about Samson as a kid, we learn about his great strength. We learn about his hair. We learn how he killed the lion. We learn how he killed Philistines. When we study this story, what do we learn about him? Well, he had a woman problem, right? He had all this. He saw these women, and he lusted after them, right? He married Philistine women, which he was told he wasn't supposed to, you know, the Israelites weren't supposed to do, right? So he was married to the Philistine woman in Timnah, He slept with a harlot. He marries Delilah, okay? We learn that he ate honey out of the body of a lion carcass, which you weren't supposed to come in contact with under the Nazarite vow. And ultimately, he betrays his Nazarite vow, right? Those are the thing. That's the real Samson. That's the real Samson we learn, right? His parents didn't want him to do it. He disobeyed them. And that's the story we really know about Samson. And yet, in Hebrews chapter 11, who's listed as one of the heroes of faith?
Samson.
So why is he there? If he had all these flaws, if he did all these things, why is he in Hebrews 11?
He cried out to God.
What?
He cried out to God.
He cried out to God at the end. Okay. You were going to say the same thing? And he
repented.
He repented. Yeah, his strength wasn't in his lock. His strength was in the Lord. Any other ideas? Even with all his flaws, he was still a man of faith. And we're all weak, right? Every single person in Hebrews 11 had a flaw, right? And we shouldn't forget that. Samuel last week, right? We studied Samuel. We talked about a lot of nice things about Samuel, but don't forget the reason. One of the reasons that the people wanted to move to kings, part one, was that they wanted to be like everyone else. But the other reason that they gave them was, hey, your sons aren't faithful, right? So we all have flaws. We all have challenges. What I want us to spend just a minute with is, we look at all these flaws, we look at all these issues with Samson, and we think about all his physical strength. And I want us to observe how committed he was, actually, to his Nazirite vow. And how much actual spiritual strength he had. And I want us to walk back through those stories and notice a couple of things that maybe we haven't noticed before when we just look at these stories. So let's start back at Judges 13. And when you go back to Judges 13, to the story of his Nazirite vow, what's unique about his Nazirite vow versus others? And when we looked at number 16, I said one of the things in number 16 is you had these rules, these expectations. And the rules and expectations were you had dietary restrictions. You couldn't cut your hair. You couldn't come into the contact with a dead body. And it was during the period that you were separated to God. It was during that time period that you were fulfilling your vow. What was the time period of his vow? It was a lifetime vow. Okay? It was a vow that his mother had made for him from the womb to his life. And so if you look at chapter 13, verse 7, it says, and this is to his mother, it says, "Behold, you shall conceive and bear a son." And she had dietary restraints. It says, "Now drink no wine or similar drink, nor eat anything unclean, for the child shall be a Nazirite to God, separated to God, from the womb to the day of his death." He had a vow for life. He was to be separated to God for life. It was the expectation that he would serve and be committed to God for life. Okay? The second thing is, what was his job? What was Samson's job? Who was he? He was a what? He was a judge. Okay? Who were the Israelites being oppressed by? The Philistines. And as a judge, it was his job to do what? Deliver them, the Israelites, from the Philistines. So when we go back through these stories, I want you to keep two things in mind. The first thing I want you to keep in mind is that he was committed to God. And the way we can know that is how God, whether or not God was with him in these stories. And the second thing I want you to keep in mind is that his job was to deliver Israel from the Philistines. Okay? And how was he doing that? He was killing Philistines. Okay? So let's go back through the stories real quick. Okay? So chapter 14. Chapter 14, when he has seen this woman in Timnah that he likes, and his mom and dad are trying to convince him not to marry her, he says in verse 4, go get her for me. In verse 3, he says, go get her for me. It says in verse 4, his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord that he was seeking an occasion to move against who? The Philistines. There is a plan here. Okay? So then what happens? This young lion comes up on him. And when he, right before it says that he tears this lion apart, what's those verses say? And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. Who was with him? God. All right, I want you to notice what chain reactions fall into motion. So the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him. He tears this lion apart. And because he's torn this lion apart, then what happens? Carcass is off to the side. Honey forms in this carcass. He eats this honey. He creates the opportunity for this riddle, right? And then this riddle is used to give to these Philistines. And the Philistines solve the riddle, and what's he do? He goes and kills 30 Philistines. Right? So I want you to think about the fact that when he goes and kills these 30 Philistines, what's it say in verse 19? The Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of the men for their apparel. All right, there is a plan going on here. All right, God was with him. Is God going to be with him if he's not committed to his Nazirite vow? Do you think God's with him if he had violated that vow? Remember, he's committed to God. He's delivering Israel from the Philistines. So let's keep going. He's tied up these foxes in chapter 15. He's tied these foxes up. There's 3,000 men out to get them. They tie them up with these ropes, and then he breaks these ropes. And right before he picks up that donkey's jawbone, in verse 14, it says what? Then the what? The Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. And the ropes that were on his arms became like flax, and it was burned with fire, and he broke the bonds loose, and he picks up the jawbone. And how many Philistines does he kill? 1,000 Philistines. How was he able to do that? He's committed to his Nazirite vow. His job was to kill Philistines. He was the judge. He was delivering Israel from the Philistines. Okay? So let's keep going. Chapter 16, story with Delilah. Okay? And so in Delilah, he has a real moments of weakness here. Okay? And he tells her about his Nazirite vow. And when he tells her about the Nazirite vow, he has now, for the first time, broken his commitment to God. And at that point, when they come to attack him, what's it say in verse 20? What did he not know? That God had departed him. That God had departed from him. Or that the Lord had departed from him. In verse 20, why? Because he had broken the vow. Right? So up until then, he had been committed to it. But once he had told Delilah about the vow, and they cut his hair, he had broken that commitment. And God broke his commitment with Samson. And that was the point in time that because of the breaking of his commitment to God, that God was no longer with him. And he couldn't do his job anymore. He couldn't destroy Philistines until he did what so many of you pointed out. He recognized what he did. And he went to God in verse 28. In verse 28, he prayed to God and said, "Remember me, strengthen me, that I may take vengeance on the Philistines." Right? He goes back to God. He recognizes what he did. He recognized that his strength came to God from God. He recognized his strength came because of that commitment he had had to God. And he asked to be recommitted so that he can continue his vengeance on the Philistines. He can continue to deliver Israel from the Philistines. And what does God do? Gives him the strength again. And how many Philistines does he kill? Killed them all in that building. Right? And he killed more in his death than he had killed in his life. And it says that he had judged them for 20 years. So as we study someone like Samson, someone we've studied a lot, and it's hard to sometimes pull something new or different from that story, what I hope we can see here, he's a flawed individual. He did some things that, you know, certainly God wouldn't want any of us to do, but no one's perfect. But what I hope you see is that one thing we can appreciate from him is that for the most part in his life, he remained committed to God. He remained committed to that Nazirite vow. And that allowed him to do what he was supposed to do, which was be a judge for Israel. It allowed him to defeat the Philistines, and he was doing that. And we can know that he was committed to his vow because time and time again, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. Being next to the dead body. My only point is he was like anyone else. He was making mistakes along the way, just like Samuel made mistakes as a Nazirite as well. My only point was he stayed committed to God in the sense of he tried to continue to serve God as he was instructed to do, and he continued to deliver Israel right from the Philistines. Yeah, exactly. Any other comments, questions? Yep. I'm sorry? Yeah. Yeah, it also shows how merciful God is and how forgiving and God can be. And all you need is to go back to him and ask for forgiveness. I think that's the other big takeaway, right, is that we're going to fail in life, and all you need to do is go back to God, and he's merciful. Yeah, he knew, that's right. He knew how to go back to God. He knew how to go to him and turn back to him. Absolutely. Okay, thank you for your attention and participation. Okay.